Yeah! Here we go. Tom and Curly Show. Thank you, everybody. Hey, special thanks to Bucky's. Bucky's Auto Service Centers. As you know, they have got 16 locations. Every one of them is terrific. And they've been around for 50 years. And that is the place to take your car. Because you can trust them at Bucky's. Pull in there and just say, hey, my car, something's wrong. Please help me. Here's my credit card. Here's a big bag of cash. Just take what you need. Fix it, please. I trust you. Implicitly. Big bag of cash. Roll into Bucky's with a big bag of cash. All right, it's big bag of cash day tomorrow, I think, at Bucky's, Tom.
Okay,
you won't even I'll take need a your big word bag. For it. Small bag. Just say, here, guys, take what you need. Dive in and no! Remember when I was traveling for Evening Magazine, I forget what country I was in, I couldn't figure out the money. You know, like, I don't know, how much is it? And you just hold out like a big pile of these. They look like cartoons of people, you know, and you're like, here, just take what you need. Here, what? How much does that cost? And you see the person look at you, and they're slowly like picking through your pile of papers that you don't quite get.
But I think most of them were honest because they realized that they would be taking advantage. It'd be like taking candy from a kid.
Yes.
It's not fair, so they actually are honest.
They were
you assume
honest.
They're honest?
I assume. I don't know. It didn't mean anything to me. Here comes Sully.
Perfect.
All right. Come on, Sully, get in here.
Hey, speaking of taking what you need, yeah. You know, you want to give me a little something that you owe me?
Oh, by the way, I think of you all the time. When I get on I-5, here's the quick story is that they were supposed to close the lane down, take the lane away, because they didn't want to confuse people. Remember this? This is at the Fed, right? They didn't want to confuse people, so they were going to start. They're going to take it away now before they begin construction. And I said, this is the stupidest thing. And then I said to Sully, I'll give you $3,000 if you get him to open that lane back up again. And Sully makes one phone call, which is nothing, really, when you think about it. Certainly not worth $3,000.
It was $5,000, by the way.
Well, the way the dollar and the mortgage rate's incredibly low with Keel Mortgage.
Pre-pandemic dollars.
They opened up this lane. They still haven't done the construction, have they, Sully?
No, they have not. Just give me what I need.
I will. I'll give it to
you. You still have a bag of cash.
I'll give it to you in bot or whatever that monetary exchange was.
Bitcoin.
Bitcoin. All right. So, hey, are people really moving back to the suburbs?
You know, this is a very interesting discussion that kind of grew out of this conversation yesterday with a well-known Northwest traffic engineer, Mark Hollenbeck, at the University of Washington. We were discussing, or actually they're talking about how much money the Department of Transportation is losing or not taking in over their forecasts based on the lack of tax revenues. And he was wondering if that now combination of working from home, whatever that turns out to look like long term, a couple days a week at the office or at home all the time, whatever, if that will mean that people will now get away from the urban centers because you don't have to go to them anymore, and you can go to that distance away and afford the house, get the big yard. Because in the past, the trade-off used to be you'd have to go way out, but then you'd get stuck in traffic, and that was the trade-off. And if there is no traffic anymore, because as we've seen, we're still down 50% on a lot of the roads, it's an interesting discussion going forward is, has all the last 20 years of urban planning now set on its head? Because now people can work from home, and they no longer have to worry about that commute, and then they could still get more home the further out that they go.
Do we know, though, Chris, how many people want to work from home? Just because you can doesn't mean that might be the ideal. We are still in a somewhat of a shutdown economy right now. I think that to assume that none of us are going to get back in our cars and drive to work, or, you know, that not that many more people than are right now, seems like a desperate guess.
Well, at this point, and that was kind of the point of this exercise, is the fact that the state really can't forecast right now because
right.
It doesn't know what our human behavior is going to be. So Mark Hollenbeck, as a traffic engineer, was kind of waxing poetic and going, geez, I'm really fascinated in what we are going to do, we collectively as the public, and will this mean a return to this? He's not predicting that, mm-hmm. But I thought it was a okay. very interesting
yeah.
discussion of some point of, wow, are we at that kind of a point? Because we don't know. We don't know what working from home will be. And he kind of prefaced it on of, well, if we get a vaccine for COVID and people believe in the next 18 months, maybe this will mm-hmm. just be a little blip. If it's four
right.
years, maybe this is a more longer term thing. So it was kind of an interesting look at, wow, what could happen downrange from somebody who really looks at this stuff. And I found it kind of fascinating just as a topic of discussion, not necessarily a blueprint of where we are going. But I found it fascinating.
Well, don't you think it was always the case that you could work from home and get the work done once you had the internet and once people were like, why do I need to come in here? Right. If I can get it done from home, why am I getting in the car, driving all the way in, spending all that time in the car, listening to Dave Ross and Colleen O'Brien on Cairo Radio? And then
that's reason enough to commute.
I know.
And Tom, listening to you guys on the way home. Let's
I know.
Forget.
This is ask not who the bell tolls. It tolls for us, Tom, because nobody's got to be. No one's in the car.
Get back in your darn cars.
No, honestly, if people are not driving and they're not commuting in, that's why they were stuck in their cars. They have nothing else to do but listen to us. So this is very bad for us. And I will encourage everybody, what is happening at work? You're not there. You know what they're doing? They're thinking of getting rid of you. And you need to get in there immediately.
In talking about this, and this discussion was happening before the Washington State Transportation Commission, as they were kind of trying to look at the effects of COVID on transportation dollars and, you know, what we have to do with toll rates and things like that. But, and so that was why it was kind of interesting. But what they found, or what people are getting, is from the tech companies specifically, is that the downside of staying away from each other is they're losing kind of the spark of ingenuity. When you had someone from, say, Microsoft get out of their South Lake Union office and walk down and meet somebody who works at another, you know, giant like that, and they had lunch and they talked about something, they came back to their own offices with, like, maybe five new ideas. And so the creative process some of these companies are going is kind of lost with that face-to-face not happening. So there's a concern about that as well. And, you know, maybe when you go forward, these teams get together once a week. And each team gets together on a different day, so, you know, we can still do social distancing. But I also found it fascinating that these people who can, by design, working on computers or thinking of things like this, they've kind of lost that creative spark because they're not there sharing details, whether having a coffee or sharing a beer after work or things like that. I found that also kind of an interesting component as well.
They also save money. This is Global Workplace Analytics, a piece from NPR. It says that the typical employer can save up to $11,000 a year for every person who works remotely half of the time.
Wow. I mean, there are cost savings to be had, but then on the downside of that, if you look downstream to another industry, what is that going to do to real estate? You know, what are the prices per square foot in the buildings downtown if no one really needs to come in? Again, which kind of leads us to what is this, you know, what is the real impacts of this if our downtowns become ghost towns because everyone is working on their 10-acre ranch out in the middle of Sultan, which sounds pretty good someday. You know, sit out there on your deck with great Wi-Fi and do the work that you need to do. Why not?
Can we get back to what's happening to talk radio in the afternoon? Isn't that more important, gentlemen? Huh?
Well, of course. The thing is most creative sparking happens while listening to the Tom and Curly Show.
Right.
That's right. So we're the substitute for going into work. You just have to listen to us. We're all good.
Yeah.
Hey,
good.
Chris, I would like to direct your attention to, again, this is from your own article. By 2023, the losses projected by the DOT are just under $700 million. What does that do to all of our transportation plans that, you know, are now out into like till 2040? A $700 million loss. How are we going to cope?
It's a great question, and they don't know. Because, and again, this $700 million, when you think of it, it's less money than they were, $700 million less than they were anticipating. It's not like they're actually losing $700 million out of the checking account. They were expecting to have $700 more, but they're not getting it. I mean, because it's interesting. I mean, you look at the 4 months from February to May. At the gas pump alone, more than $100 million in lost gas tax revenue. Because people are not out. And that, what does that fund? That funds roads and maintenance projects and things like that. You can't get that money back, at least not in the short term. Ferries is losing $10 million a month in revenue that they expected because ridership is off so much. They're losing $110 million, well, $107 million, I think, in tolling. Over the next biennium because, you know, the lack of cars out there, they aren't using the toll lanes as much. I don't know how they're going to recoup this money. I don't know why they haven't decided to get some sort of special session together down in Olympia to talk about these real dollars and cents, because it's not just DOT. I mean, Metro's losing $480 million or $460 million. Sound Transit is losing hundreds of millions of dollars over their predictions over the because of lost sales tax revenue. So, yeah, I mean, these are legit issues that I really honestly believe it's time for Olympia to get together and start talking about this.
Yeah.
A special session, I think, is almost, it has to happen.
By the way, you will only hear all of those numbers on talk radio on the way home on talk radio. Bring it all the way around. So,
and we didn't, even get to ask him about Metro cutbacks.
I know, Tom. That's why I did that intentionally. I pressed that.
Why don't you ask a transit driver what they think of what's happening right now with Dow Constantine trying to take away their new contract? Mm. That sounds pretty interesting, doesn't it?
Dicey.
Thanks, Ellie. Say anything else? You just laughed. Sorry,
Sully. Oh, I potted him down.
Oh, you potted Sean down. Cut me.
Goodbye.
Yeah, Sean,
sorry.
Cut me.
It was much cleaner. It was much cleaner. I shouldn't have questioned.
Grab the hook.
Get him out of here. All right, stop it. Stop the. Bring the music down. Supreme Court lets the employers out of having to provide birth control. So it was an Obamacare passes, and then everybody votes on it. It barely squeaks through. It goes through. And then near the, I think they slipped this thing in there. HHS put in there that it's a mandate that employers must provide birth control. So then all of a sudden you had religious groups. There was, hey, I'm an employer, a Catholic school, or I'm in Little Sisters of the Poor. We don't want to provide birth control. It goes against what we believe. And it's been fought. Finally, when the Supreme Court kicked it up at, I think, 8-0, they basically said, you know, we're going to kick it back to the states. They throw it back to the other courts. And then I looked like it was about to go through. And then some different, I guess, AGs in various states across the United States, most of them are Democrats, said, no, we're going to challenge this. So they challenge it again. So it goes back before the Supreme Court. They finally take a look at it. And how do they rule, Tom?
Yeah, your side, John, if you and I have different sides when it comes to Supreme Court decisions, this one, you won.
Oh.
Maybe the transgender thing was a bone to the liberals. This is more of a bone to the conservatives. And they said that, yes, it's within the Trump administration's abilities. That's the dispute, not whether you should or shouldn't, but that the Trump administration, unlike the Obama administration, the Trump administration wanted to do this, which said that if your employer has some kind of religious objections, and it needn't be that, you know, like they use the Sisters of the Poor, as the main argument for that, but this applies to all employers. If you have an employer who has personal objections to birth control, mm-hmm. which I mean, this isn't just an objection to abortion, but hasn't literally an objection to birth control, which is wildly popular even among Catholics, birth control. But if an employer says that he has a religious objection to that, the Supreme Court ruled that they don't have to decide that. I mean, that they don't have to pay that. Under the Obama administration, they would have. And what I'm wondering is this now going to be like back and forth between whichever administration is in? Can they, you know, if a Biden administration goes back, can they say, okay, no, under ours, or if this is going to have some kind of precedent setting that you can never restrict? Because at this point, they just ruled that the Trump administration had the right to go ahead and do this if they wanted to.
Right, because they should have ruled on the fact that the government is compelling thought. And it can't do that. And the protection under the First Amendment would say that, no, I can't be compelled to do something that I am morally against, as the Little Sisters of the Poor. And the fact that the Supreme Court should then kick it back to the federal government has no right to mandate that you have to provide this service. If you want, just have the states decide on it. The states want to do it, let the states do it. Let each one of the states determine whether or not the states will provide birth control for the citizens. Don't make the employer do it if the employer has some problem with it. So they ruled on the fact, does the president have the power to do this? The answer is yes. Did Obama have the power to mandate? The answer was yes on that as well. But by the way, it was not in Obamacare. In the original piece that they voted on, I know they voted on it, and then they had to go back and read it, as Nancy Pelosi said. It was added in later on by HHS.
Yeah. And the argument that the Supreme Court used was that there's a 1993 Religious Freedom Restoration Act.
Yes.
And what the argument there said was that the government must have a compelling reason for programs that substantially burden religious beliefs. Mm-hmm. And so the argument from the left was that, that the compelling reason was that women need this, or a lot of women that need this, and so you would be burdening anybody who worked for an organization, even if they had nothing to do with the actual business. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you work for a convent. If you're a nun in a convent, I don't think that they're going to be concerned about birth control. But, you know, you were Hobby Lobby. We had that ruling a few years earlier that there's nothing necessarily religious about Hobby Lobby, the activity of the business. But because the owner was, I don't know if he's a strict Catholic or whatever he is, had religious objections, they could say that. In this particular case, they said, yes, that was that the argument in defense of women and should have access to contraceptive care wasn't a compelling enough reason to reject someone's religious beliefs for not wanting to do that.
Mm-hmm. I bet it does come back around again, and they left the hole open. But then say that the state then provides it. The state basically provides it now, that if you want to get free birth control, you can head to Planned Parenthood, and some type of program will provide it for you. The Little Sisters of the Poor. The nice thing is the Obama administration stopped fining them tens of thousands of dollars because it's right there in their name, poor. Little Sisters of the Poor.
They could use that money. No, and one of the silver lining for liberals, the Trump administration, this is Kayleigh McEnany, actually said that women who lack access to contraceptive coverage because of their employer's religious beliefs, who are now impacted, or moral convictions, to more easily access such care through federal programs. So the Trump administration, for the next 4 months at least, is committed to trying to find federal programs that will allow for that, that doesn't abuse the religious beliefs of the owners of the companies that don't have to provide it.
Why is the federal government providing birth control? All right, right back. Marcos Shoe Casino. It's a good bet. Whenever you go to the Marcos Shoe Casino, you're going to have fun. It's also a good bet that whenever Rachel Bell shows up, it's going to be fun as well. Hey, it's your radio. Stop that. You can stop that. Rachel? I can appreciate you doing your little gyrations.
It's called the spastic dancing.
Do the Puyallup. Not this year.
Nope.
And get yourself a funnel cake. An elephant ear, and
I am shocked another event has been canceled.
I can't believe
it. Wow. What's next? Concerts? Movies?
This segment? The mascot, the rebel?
Oh, good segue, buddy. All right, so in Kirkland at Juanita High School, they have a mascot called the Rebel, or the Rebels. And many student and community members think that it's racist, since the Confederate soldiers called rebels in the Civil War fought to maintain slavery.
If you actually go to the Juanita High School website itself and look at the school's history of the mascot, you'll see that when the school opened in 1971, we chose the rebel mascot to symbolize a break from tradition to go along with our open concept school, just as the 13 colonies broke from England. I just think the confusion is that people always relate the Juanita rebel mascot to the Confederacy when that is the farthest thing from the truth.
That's a Juanita High School student who wants to keep the rebel mascot. He also wants to remain anonymous, and I changed the pitch of his voice.
Just because if I do come out and say, like, that I support the mascot, people will say that I will support racism or I support white supremacy.
I just have to say, I felt really cool doing the voice change thing because that's
did he get
like
a choice?
60 minutes.
Did he get a choice of what kind of pitch you put on his voice? If I were him right now, I'd be like, I love the fact that I'm standing up for free speech, but the pitch is brutal.
He asked for more of a Barry White.
Yeah, that's what I would have done.
And I said, you're in high school. You have to earn that.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you buy a bearskin rug, you can sound like Barry White, young man.
It's okay. Free peach.
It is. So the problem is that the word rebel has multiple meanings. So when students voted on the rebel mascot back in 1971, it was associated with the Revolutionary War and then the idea just that they were rebellious. They were being rebels. And at the time, the school's logo featured a mountain and an eagle. But in the 80s, they changed the logo to an image that featured that blue X with the white stars in it. That's just like the Confederate flag. And that Confederate image was painted on the school walls. It was printed in the yearbook. And it wasn't until 1990 that they switched back to the original logo. So for some people, those old connotations remain.
I personally think we should change it.
That is Ivan Makov.
Did you change his voice too?
No,
because he's toeing the company line.
Well, yeah. Everybody who wants the mascot removed didn't mind using their their name,
right,
but
because
people...
they're not racist.
Okay. No comment. Ivan Makov will be a junior at Juanita this fall. He will retain his Barry White-esque voice.
Juanita is known in the East Side to be kind of racist, really intolerant of a lot of ideas, and kind of like the backward school. That's a really horrible reputation. Additionally, a lot of students I've talked to feel really unsafe about going to a school where the mascot's a Southern term from the Confederate. Plus, it's hard to actually be prideful in a school when the name is like really anti-Black.
So in 2018, students circulated a petition to remove the mascot. They took a vote, and the majority of the students voted to keep the Rebels. But today, with the new social justice movement that's happening right now, the issue has resurfaced. And this time, the school board is going to make the decision, because the idea was that there's only, and I don't know the exact number because the district would not make any comments or do an interview, but the students told me that I think the population of Black students is about 3%. So when you have that minority, you kind of need them. You can't get this majority vote that they needed. So here I'm going back to our anonymous Juanita students.
What is the importance of the mascot for you personally?
Just graduating as a Juanita Rebel. My mom graduated as a Rebel. My brother graduated as a Rebel. So now I'm just looking forward to continue the family history of graduating from Juanita High School as a Rebel.
We're both second generation Rebels, and we've been Kirkland residents all our life. And so we just want to fight to keep the current Rebel mascot.
I admit she got the short end of the stick.
Yeah,
with that
did you put the button on her too?
This is my first time changing voices. Hey, I hardly knew how
to
do it.
Take the kids seriously.
What should she sound like?
I'd Barry White.
Oh. So it's not just the current students who are upset about this. There is an alumni group on Facebook. Whoa. It is overflowing with arguments about the mascot. So Mary Manning was on that board. She graduated in 1977, and she says she recognizes that the school's old Confederate logo was wrong, but she doesn't think there's anything racist about today's logo or mascot. The argument is Rebels can mean a couple things, and one of them does mean the Confederate.
That is not the definition of a rebel, though.
It's one of them.
I mean, a rebel is a person that rebels against anything. A teenager rebels against their parent. The women who fought against getting our rights so that we could vote was a rebel. To say a rebel is a Confederate Army officer is all in a definition. So I'm willing to fight for that right to keep the word rebel, because anything can be turned around as a definition. So to sit there and say rebel is racist is wrong. And I'm one of the first to say that, especially since my family is so interracial. Why are we being so politically correct that we have to remove the word rebel just because someone else is offended by it? I mean, I'm not trying to be mean or disrespectful, but come on.
So the district is going to make their decision by the end of July. Now you may speak.
Okay.
Well, I think at this point, turn it off. Rachel, I'm serious.
What?
I am so serious.
What do you want me to do? I'm sorry, Joan.
What do you think? Where do you think is it the parents who makes the decision? School board's going to do this?
School board. Okay. Yeah. I think that this is tough. Personally, I would say if I heard the Rebels, I wouldn't think of the Confederacy. But when you know that that is a meaning, and also that the school embraced that on their logo for many years, even though it's been decades, that kind of makes it stand out a little bit more. And I think it shouldn't be about the majority vote. You know, if people are offended or they feel unsafe, if the Black students at the school feel unsafe with that being their mascot, I think that that is more important than the nostalgia of your parents and your grandparents having gone to the school. Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, yeah, I call a horse hockey pocky on feeling unsafe. At the idea that you're unsafe by the mascot, that you go to that school, and that while you walk around the hallway, you feel unsafe. Really? No, I would think what you do is you feel like you're getting attention. You feel as if your feelings are somehow being validated. So then do you feel unsafe because of it? I do. It just makes you feel special. 44% of the people at that school are a minority. They're primarily Asian and Hispanic. They're just a little light on the Hispanic compared to others. 46% is the minority across the state of Washington for other schools. So, Juanita, I don't know what the black student ratio is, the percentage there. But really, do you really...
3%, I think she said.
3%? Was that
That's what I was told, but the district wouldn't confirm.
They don't confirm, yeah. But you get a chance to say, hey, do you feel upset about this? Because, well, yeah, I guess. I don't... I mean, really... They honestly feel threatened by the mascot.
Well, I'm curious, in one of your students' comments, they said that Juanita High School has a kind of reputation for something that's not...
racism.
Okay. I mean, is that... I don't know enough about, the sense of what high schools are like, but if it does, if it has that kind of reputation, that's just one student. I don't know if he speaks for a lot or not, but if that is an image... issue for Juanita, this would be a good move, even if it's historically unfair to the originators. If at least one time it was symbolized by a Confederate soldier, that might be a way to say, hey, we're changing our image, if it already has that kind of negative image.
Well, in the hypersensitive world of believing that the word rebel is somehow going to be driven back to the Civil War,
well,
then
was.
Of course people would then say, oh, well, then it must be racist. It's racism on that, so it must be racist inside the school. I don't know. Overall, yeah. I'm just trying to find online, are there stories? I can't find anything right now, where someone sent a tweet out. But kids do that all the time. So at Eastlake, somebody will send some horrible thing out, something else, and then the school has to deal with it, and then they bring everybody in and say, hey, let's be more conscious of what we're sending out. But generally, kids do this sort of stuff. They send out stupid stuff. They use the N-word as a way of getting attention. But do you believe that they'll switch it over, that the parents will get rid of it?
I think they will.
Yeah, I believe they'll cave as well. Yep.
Yeah.
I read something that suggested that maybe from now on, when we're choosing mascots or naming teams, just to avoid human mascots in general, because then you'll be safe. Go with the wombats, the banana slugs, the redwood trees, and you're never going to make anybody uncomfortable.
I do think it's interesting that the students had a vote 2 years ago, and it was voted down. I remember I became the editor of the Blanchett High School paper my senior year.
Oh, braggity, and, brag, brag.
No. Yeah. No, get this. No.
You know what? Ring the bell, because that comes up every week.
The joke's on me, though, because we said, okay, you know what the name of our paper was? The mitre. Do you know what the mitre is? The mitre is the bishop's hat that he wears. And we thought that was so outdated. We're going to have a big vote to see if we want to change it. What do you want to change it to? The students voted to keep it. Here we all thought we were going to be radical and we're going to really show that we have a new newspaper at hand. And they ended up going with tradition.
The moral of the story is Tom constantly out of step with the majority, even
that. Yeah,
I was
right.
Hoping you were going to change it to a more modern hat.
Yeah, the beret, and it didn't go.
The yarmulkes. That's a great name for a paper.
The yarmulkes.
And not controversial at all.
Rush Limbaugh was in the play-by-play booth there for Monday Night Football, and they got rid of him. They said, just too political. He's bringing up stuff. I don't want to watch that and listen to him. Why are you politicizing my favorite sport? Well, then ESPN jumps in and decides to go all political, and then people cut the cable or at least get rid of ESPN. So ESPN says, sorry. We're going to stick to sports. Politics and sports just does not mix. But WNBA has decided it wants its players to have on the back of the jerseys. Does it going to say Black Lives Matter, like in big letters or small letters or BLM or something? Or what is it going
to be? Yeah, no, it says Black Lives Matter. It's amazing to me. The first time I saw this was in Europe, in the European leagues, in Germany and England. All those players, I mean, they have Black Lives Matter over the back of their shoulders, sort of like where your name would be normally. So it has become quite the thing around the world in sports to, show your solidarity with, I don't know, the protesters or something, the sentiment. And so the WNBA, which has been much like the NBA, has been sort of socially progressive on a lot of these issues, have decided as a league that they're going to allow for that. And now we hear that there's one owner who happens to also be in the U.S. Senate is quite outraged.
Yeah, Kelly Loeffler, she is part owner of, is it the Atlanta Dream?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and she's running again for her seat there as a senator. She's being challenged by Doug Collins. And now some of the players that have had some relationship with Kelly, know her, been to her house and things like that, they're upset because Kelly writes a letter to, I guess, the WNBA organization saying, listen, let's, you know what, why are we going to be exclusive? Why be divisive? Let's keep politics where politics is. Let sports be so that you can have an opinion and I can have an opinion, but we can all agree that we're playing this great game of basketball and celebrating women in sports. Why bring in politics that could possibly cause people to feel like, well, I don't agree with that. Why don't we all agree with basketball is great and leave the rest of the stuff somewhere else? Now some of the players are saying,
when our league is made up of 80% of black females, this directly affects us. Every single day when we take off those uniforms, we walk out into the world and we can potentially be George Floyd. Shoot, we can be in our beds and be Breonna Taylor. So for her to come out and say that we're divisive and that Black Lives Matters movement is a divisive organization. I call her BS on that.
So, yeah, she has a real, tussle on her hand. In our pre-show meeting, I was suggesting that she might be doing this for political effect, too.
Yeah,
not that she doesn't believe this. But if Doug Collins challenges her from the right, which she might be. By the way, this was a seat that the governor named, and the expectation was Doug Collins is the highest profile member of the Republican Party in the House of Representatives from Georgia. And I think his expectation was that he would get the appointment. Instead, he gave it to Kelly Loeffler instead. And so this might be a political move on her part. Whether my guess is she doesn't think the WNBA is really going to go along with her, but this might present a kind of cover for her politically. Now, that diminishes her statement, and we might want to just take the statement straight on, but it might have political ramifications down the line in Georgia.
Yes. You always have to question any politician while in the middle of a campaign and getting news and kind of secure the base. You know, does she think it's going to play well for her and her voters? Mm-hmm. Probably yes, right?
Because
and knowing that it's not going to do anything for her, but it gets a chance for us to talk about it and certainly people in Georgia to go, well, look at Kelly coming in there. And, you know, she's saying something, and that's good. So
she might be a better representative of the state of Georgia, although Georgia is maybe changing, too. She's a better representative for the state of Georgia than she is for the WNBA.
Yes. If you want to put the name of a Marxist organization on the back of your shirt, go ahead. If you were the WNBA, go ahead.
Or make it a symbolic philosophy. Black Lives Matter. Who could disagree with that?
Take a look at the organization and what they stand for, and then get a better idea of what you're promoting.
It's more than just the organization, John.